Welcome to Turning Pages, a series of in-depth conversations with authors about their works.
All right, well, his latest book is Coop for Keeps, the follow-up to Coop the Great. Larry Verstraete joins me on the show. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So you write in the acknowledgments that, you know, when you closed the book on Coop the Great, you didn't necessarily think there was going to be another Coop story.
No, I didn't actually. I finished the first book and I thought, well, that was nice. And I enjoyed the whole experience. And then I moved on to some other projects. But all the time that I was doing that, I just had this nagging feeling that that dog was still with me. It's quite a personality. And I really took to him to write the book. And then I began to imagine maybe what had happened after that story finished. So that was sort of the I guess the force behind Coop for Keeps, the second book.
When you create a character like that, does it happen where you're like, I wonder what he's up to? Or is it more, I wonder what I could do with this character?
I think it might have been a combination of both things. I definitely wondered what he was up to because I left him in a totally new situation, a new home with people that he wasn't all that familiar with. And quite a distance away from where he used to live. And he had a history of being adopted and then rejected and returned to shelters, or he ran away and all the rest of that. So I really kind of wondered what happened to him. And then I guess there was also that push to maybe write something, but what I was working on didn't seem to be quite working the way I wanted it to. So this was a nice option to turn to that.
So then when you return to it, do you have like a concrete thought as to like what Coop is going to do or what the plot is going to be? Or how do you sort that out when you're returning to a character and starting with that character?
Well, I think I've kind of muddled through it a little bit. I didn't really have a concrete plan. I kind of knew the situation. I knew his history. And so I could maybe take it from there. He has always had this feeling, I guess, that he didn't quite belong. And in the first book, Coop the Great, he does find a home where he's really happy and things work out really well for him until the end when he has to move on to a new home. So I just wondered if his history was following him or whether he was settling in and what the problems might be that he's encountering. So I kind of built the story around all of that, him wanting to believe he was going to be okay, that he wanted to prove himself, and that he was really found a place where he would be happy.
So then do you build the what happens to Zach, the young boy, as like kind of a mirroring thing for what Cooper's going through? Is there some thought to kind of like his trajectory should be mirrored or matched by someone else in the book?
I don't think that was a conscious decision. As a matter of fact, I was a little surprised myself at the end when I kind of stepped away from it to realize that there was a parallel between their two stories. But I guess Zach was in the same situation as Coop was in. He was in a new situation himself in a new home, and he just happened to be with Coop at that time. So some of the problems they encountered were similar problems, you know, fitting in, adjusting to a new place, kind of finding where you stand in the order of things. That was familiar territory, you know, problems for both of them. So I think I kind of wove them together with that in mind.
And both in some way deal with bullying. And this is something that, you know, you write in the afterward, like that there's like a little blurb on bullying. Like, was that a central kind of thing that you wanted to address, a topic that you were looking to explore? Or did that afterward come about after you'd kind of looked at what the story told you about it?
Well, I started the story off with a situation about Zach running away from two bullies. And I think that was the sort of the thrust of the story from the very, very beginning. I don't think it was consciously trying to unravel too much about it, not what bullying was or why people bullied, although that does come up in the story. And in the end, I think everybody can form their own opinions on that. Because Coop is the one telling the story and he's a dog seeing humans and making observations about them and trying to sort out what exactly are these people doing and why are they doing what they're doing. I think that gives license to the reader to ask the same questions too. So I think in a way it serves a purpose that way, even though maybe it wasn't intentional from a plot writing point of view, but it does sort of weave a web of wonder about why these things happen, how you might get out of it if you were in that situation, and but seeing it through the eyes of a dog who's working through all of that too. So I
Right.
think for kids especially, that kind of gives them license to maybe ask those questions.
Right, because he's, obviously a dachshund and, gets called a wiener dog and disparaged for his little legs and his long body that, he equates what happens to Zach with what his own experiences.
Yes, yeah, he kind of sees a reflection, I guess, in what's happening to Zach in his own life as well.
So when your POV character is a dog, what kind of either like limitations or freedoms does that present in terms of the way that you refract the world that you're creating? Like, do you find that you're able to say some things about the world you wouldn't be able to say from a human vantage point, or does it, create some problems as far as like what would this dog know or understand?
Well, I guess the big limitation is because it's written in Coop's point of view. Coop has to be in every scene, and you can't really move away from that. So he's telling the story, seeing it as and experiencing it as he is, with I suppose the way that dogs operate. So they're basically keen on sense and sight is a secondary kind of thing, and they're really operating on clues about what's going on around them. I mean, and I had dogs, and my family has dogs, so I know I knew they all had personalities and operated in different ways, and I kind of built Coop around that, I think. Maybe not consciously, but definitely there are some semblance of the personalities of dogs I once had. I think that kind of opened up the door for me rather than closing it. I could relate in a lot of ways and imagine what a dog might be experiencing given the realities of the way dogs operate. So I'm not quite sure I'm answering your question, but steering around it perhaps.
I mean, and it's maybe a vague question, but I guess, a further question to that is obviously you created this POV in the first book. Did returning to it, had you had like some new thoughts or like figured out some puzzles that maybe you were presented in the first one as to kind of how Coop could be the one at the center of the story, right? Like, did you think, okay, I can't do this because Coop wouldn't be there or Coop wouldn't know this or any problem solving when it comes to that kind of angle?
Yeah, there were instances where I had to decide, well, how am I going to get Coop into this scene or this situation? So he pretty much has to go along everywhere with Zach, or he couldn't be outside of the realm of things, but we could delve into his thoughts a lot, and that sort of gave a little bit of freedom there too. Yeah, and I guess the other thing is it is a sequel, but I also wanted it to be a standalone read. So I didn't want somebody to have to read Coop the Great first to come to this one, Coop for Keeps. So that meant putting in, essential information, I guess, but not dwelling on it because the story existed in the first book. All the reader had to do was be caught up to speed, perhaps, and maybe wonder, well, I wonder what happened here. And if they were really curious enough, they might want to go back to the first book to read it and find out. So the situation, for example, of Zach's parents have split, they're no longer together, his father's not in the picture. And that's part of the reason that Zach is having such a difficult time adjusting, and he's quite angry about that and a few other things as well. But I didn't want to delve into, well, what happened there, because that's in the first book. I think all the reader needed to know was, this parents aren't there anymore, and Zach is really grieving the loss of his father's influence. So I think those decisions were prominent,
Right.
and then how to work Zach into those decisions and things.
Yeah, I'm curious what kind of balancing act that is. As someone who, I read this book, not having read Coop the Great, I was curious as to kind of like how much information you're trying to compress or convey and how much you're wanting to just tell this new story, and how much thought you give to like who my readers are. Are they coming back for Coop, or are they just joining me in this chapter?
Well, yeah, those were definitely in my mind the whole time. And I think, you know, when you revise and edit, that's where those things come to the forefront more than they necessarily do when you're writing the first draft. So you have to screen some of the things out, I think. I did take out some stuff that I thought was, well, that's background stuff, but they don't really need to know that to get to this point. And then other things where maybe I added a bit more information, but hopefully didn't give away everything, because I do want, I want the readers to be asking questions as they're reading and wondering. And I think that keeps them moving forward in the story.
That's something that you employ within the story too, right? That the character of Pete kind of withholds things until a certain point. Is that, you know, a storytelling method you kind of rely on, or do you find that because it creates this intrigue within, like for Zach and Coop, they're both very curious about Pete and he's only telling them a bit at a time, that it propels them?
I think it does a service in both those directions. You know, I think it keeps the reader kind of on, maybe not a cliffhanger kind of thing, but a little bit of a mystery there. That they're eager to maybe turn pages and hopefully find the answer for that too. And I think it's also something that drives the characters themselves forward. You know, this whole thing about what's Pete's past and what's going on there, and why is he the way he is, and what information is he telling us and what is he not telling us? You know, those are questions that the reader has as well as the characters too.
So with a character like Pete, does he come fully formed? Like, do you have a sense of his backstory, or is that something that you build up within the book as you write it?
I think it was more as I wrote it. I think I knew who I wanted Pete to be. I wanted him to be in some ways a reflection of Mike, who was Coop's original companion. And because I wanted Coop to feel comfortable with him, but also be looking at, well, what's different about him than my previous owner. So, a lot of what happened with Pete and a lot of the development in the story kind of happened as I was writing, not really intentionally, but once I was in the flow of the story, it just seemed natural to bring these other things in.
You mentioned you called Pete his companion. There is a distinction that Coop makes between owners, companions, and masters. Is that something that you'd thought about with regards to dogs prior to writing the Coop stories, or was that something that you developed?
I think it was one of the earliest things I wrote for the book, but I didn't really know how I was going to weave it in. I guess I was just thinking about, you know, I think with people, we often put them in categories too. We wouldn't give them the same labels necessarily, but, you know, we do have ways of classifying people. And I just thought, well, if a dog did it from a dog's perspective, you know, we would have owners who like to possess things and masters who like to rule on others. And then, you know, what we would call friends or companions would be another category. So in Coop's simple mind, I guess, he's just seeing those three, and he's basing it on, you know, humans he's living with.
Right.
So not necessarily the whole entire population.
When you say Coop's simple mind, I mean, obviously there's a lot going on in his mind, but like, you know, the way he infers things or deduces things, there are some limitations to it as a dog based on experience and, you know, not understanding kind of the ways of the human world. Does that create like a way to shape this story or tell this story geared towards like a younger audience because it's not everything's known?
I think kids are a little more accepting of some of that. You know, they have to, I mean, I'm sure they all realize that a dog can't tell the story like this. And there's a lot of things that, you know, are invented about it, but there's enough, I think, of a connection that it makes it believable in a way that they can follow along the storyline and actually see how this might happen and how, you know, from a dog's point of view, this might be interpreted. So I think it's just a vehicle that hopefully anyways, kids can relate to, and not just kids, adults too. A lot of adults read the books as well. You know, just to suspend belief at the beginning of the story, to believe a dog would actually be involved in this and telling the tale. That's kind of where I'm hoping people will be. And at the same time, to maybe see a reflection of themselves in the story. You know, perhaps they're identifying themselves as someone who's like that, or can see themselves in a situation like that and then wonder what they would do. I think those are kind of, well, part of my goals as being a writer. Not necessarily, you know, the first and foremost thing about writing, but partly in there, that you're
Right.
drawing connections.
Now, speaking of connections, I want to ask about your connections to dreaming, because dreams are kind of a recurrent motif within this book. And I think maybe partially because, Coop is an older dog and so spends some time napping. But dreams can be like portentous. Dreams can be, aspirational. Like, does all the dreaming come from like your own relationship to dreaming, or is this something that you imagined, let's say?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's just imagination. Like, I don't have a great recollection of dreams. You know, if I'm dreaming, I wake up, I don't really recall them all that much unless it's really intense. What I do know from the dogs I've had that they're constantly napping, and you can tell from their physical reaction sometimes that you know there's something going on in their head at the same time. They're twitching, or their eyes are moving a little bit, or they're you know that kind of thing. So I think they dream too. So I just went into that mode in writing it because it reveals a lot perhaps of the inner mind and the effect that sometimes things that happen to us stay with us for a while, and we're trying to process them through dreams. So, you know, that was kind of the intention of using the dreams, was to bring some of that out, the conflict between things, and the fact that some of the things that happen to a person really stay with them for a long time. And they doesn't necessarily mean they're bad things, they're just moments in time that we're trying to process.
Yeah, I've read that like dreams are the mind kind of like the subconscious processing itself in some way. And it does seem that, Coop at times is doing the same. It could be argued, storytelling in some way is us trying to process things. Like this is, I mean, ultimately your dream, this book.
True. Yeah, I guess I'm living the dream.
But also like processing some things that, like these
Well,
issues.
yes, you know, I see what you mean there, but sure, for example, the bullying and stuff. I mean, I can't think of too many people that wouldn't say that they've been bullied at some point or other, and not necessarily in a physical way. You know, it happens in workplaces to adults and in relationships, and certainly kids. On the playground, boys in particular are very physical with their bullying, girls more of a social thing. So I think maybe that was part of me in there. I mean, I've had instances like Zach, I suppose, where I feel threatened or bullied, or there's a bit of a power struggle and I'm feeling helpless to do anything about it. So maybe that's me working out my problems by
Right.
writing about them.
It's also curious because, I've heard often that people say, there's at least a little bit of the author in the central character, right? And, your central character in this case is an aging dachshund that, like, clearly you're not an aging dachshund, but like his relationship to bullying or something, that could be the thing that is a sliver of Larry.
Yeah, well, and I think in some ways, Coop and I are at the same stage in our lives. So I'm an older person too. So maybe that made it easier to write about him. I don't know.
Right. So Coop, as I said, has like some portentous dreams. Like he doesn't just, process something that's already happened. He kind of foresees some things. Did you have any hesitation about having those kind of dreams?
You mean dreams that forecast the future?
Within the book, like,
Or
did you think, like, should Coop envision this before it happens in his dreams?
well, part of I think his dream, the one that keeps reoccurring, is based on something that happened to him in the first book. And maybe that's not apparent here. He just seems like he's got this really intense dream that looks like it's forecasting the future, where it's actually a reflection of something that happened in the past as well. So he's kind of living through this nightmare that reoccurs, trying to understand something that happened in the past. But as it turns out, it's also, he's also placed in a situation where it's something that happens in the future as well. And, you know, he's working out both ends of it, I think.
So I'm guessing, though, that the dream around Little Squirt was not in the first book.
No.
So that's the one of, there's a group of crows that Zach befriends, and then Coop has a dream about one of them. And then that, you know, essentially comes true. And without spoiling, you know, what happens, I was curious, like, did you hesitate to have Coop kind of predict it via his dream?
Well, I think what he was, if I remember the story well enough, he actually saw something looking at clouds in the sky.
Oh, it was in the clouds. It wasn't in the dream.
Imagined
that's right.
This,
yes. And it was imaginary.
This
yeah.
Blackened thing happening. It wasn't so much a dream. But he just felt like that was ominous and something awful was going to happen as a result of that.
Right. So the crows is the other thing that you have in the afterword, is a little bit about like crows being misunderstood. And like, had you had an appreciation for crows prior to this book? Or was this something that in doing some research and creating this story, you kind of developed a fondness for crows?
Yeah, well, they're kind of fascinating birds. But I think it probably was in my head, because I think when I started writing the book, it was spring, and there was a group of crows outside my window. It seemed the same group every single day, and you know, annoying, squawking, and all the rest of that. And when I go for a walk, they seem to be following me. They would kind of hop from one tree or hydro pole to the next one for a stretch. And then, you know, within a few weeks, they seem to have moved on somewhere else. So I think that was the inspiration behind it. I realized, you know, that would be kind of an interesting thing to add to a book. I wasn't sure how I was going to work it all in. As it turned out, it became a really important and big part of the story itself. But wasn't initially my plan. I just thought, well, they're interesting birds. And then when I did some research, I realized, well, that's pretty fascinating, especially the part about, you know, crows holding funerals and things like that. And I thought, well, maybe I could use some of that in the book.
So in puzzling that out, then, if you didn't know that that was going to be part of it, and it does become such a central thing, and the crow funeral is a very significant moment in the book, how do you weave that in? Is that through the editing process? Like, have you written kind of a draft without the crows being so central? Or is this like kind of sifting through puzzle pieces and deciding what picture you're trying to build?
More of the latter, I think. You know, I didn't really have a plot outline so much as just key points in mind, like key scenes in mind that I thought I would have to integrate in. I knew what the ending was going to be. Oh, I wasn't quite sure how I was going to get there. So I had enough, you know, realization of what the scenes would be that I could fill the gap with other scenes to get to those points. So that's how that kind of book came together. And I think I knew that one of the themes is going to be belonging, is, you know, both Zach and Coop had this need to find a place where they fit. And I knew that was going to be kind of the central theme behind it all. And as it turned out, that's kind of what happened with Pete, too, I think. He kind of realized what he needed to do to make life work for him. So that's, it sort of came together in little bits and pieces. And as far as the crows go, I really didn't know at the beginning how to integrate them. I had a long conversation with my wife about that at one point, and then she get tossed out a few ideas, and then I began to see, oh yeah, well, you know, I could use them this way. And the other thing is, I didn't want the bullying thing to be solved with a bunch of, you know, physical stuff going on, you know, one kid beating up another kid, that kind of thing. I wanted it to be more of a, you know, a rational process. And not that it isn't necessarily a little bit on the violent side towards the end, but it's just not the traditional way of solving a problem.
No, and it's not like adult intercession either.
No, that's true. Yeah,
That kind
Zach
of
kind of works
figures it
out the
out on their own.
situation. Yes. Yeah,
Was
that was important too.
yeah. That that he doesn't have to like sink to the bully's level, and in fact can kind of like point to a different path.
Right.
You mentioned, the belonging was kind of central to this. The book's called Coop for Keeps. Was that an obvious title for you because of the like sense of belonging, or did you kind of toss around any other ideas for book titles?
The title actually was probably the thing that was last in place. I really didn't know what the title would be. I kind of wanted it to mimic a little bit Coop the Great, so that there was a connection in the titles. And it was actually a fellow writer in, I have a writer's group I belong to. Somebody tossed that one out, and I thought, yeah, that's exactly what it's about, keeping and wanting. And so that's where the title actually came towards the end, and it turned out it had three words like the first title, so that was kind of a parallel too.
For sure. Well, Coop for Keeps is out through Yellow Dog, which is, I guess, a Great Plains imprint. Is that
Yes, it is, right. They're imprint for younger readers.
just coincidentally, it's got dog in the imprint title, so that's kind of nice.
Yeah, I like that. Bit
Yeah.
of symmetry there.
Not that it's a canine exclusive writing, but that it's
No.
yeah. Well, Larry, thanks very much for taking some time to talk about the book, and congratulations on its release.
Okay, thank you so much, and thank you for talking to me too.